Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, July the 11th, and today we're going to chat with our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. We're going to get into two very important topics in the news today. Of course, all of this stuff about the Russia connection and all of the stuff about Russia this and Russia that, I personally am getting very tired of it. I think it's just a lot of nothing, but it just keeps coming. It just keeps coming. It's amazing how many people are invested in this particular story. And then in the second half, we'll talk about Obamacare and the GOP. I feel a bit more optimistic today that something is going to be done and that we will actually have a resolution to this problem, and we can repeal and maybe perhaps replace, although I'm not really that determined about replacement, but I do think repeal has to happen. Let me say hello to our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. How are you?
Buenas noches.
Hey, how are you? Buenas noches desde Texas.
Sí, and de Minnesota too.
Okay, all right. Up and down I-35, if the people listening can visualize how to connect us. I-35, which goes by about 3 miles from where I am right now, goes all the way up north to Minneapolis. So
and
where
that
the
goes about, it goes only about 3 blocks from me.
Right, so it's the I-35 connection. You and I will be known as the I-35 connection because we are literally, if I drive 3 miles and get on I-35 and I don't get off, I'll end up in all the way up in Minnesota.
In my living room.
Yes, pretty close. Pretty close to that. So we're the I-35 connection, and today we've got a lot of politics to get into, but can we start with the Russia thing? Because this is, I tell you, and I hear this from a lot of friends, okay? People who are not that political, they're not political like you and me, but just, I don't know, just people who are good people, they're family people, they have jobs, they pay taxes, they do the heavy lifting, as I like to say, of the country. And everybody's fed up with this story. And what I hear over and over and over again from people is, where's the evidence? I mean, when are we ever going to find some evidence that some wrongdoing happened or something wrong happened, Barry?
Well, as you know, I have been in my Prairie Editor column and in my other writings and on this program on a regular basis, I have decried the efforts by the opponents to President Trump to delegitimize his presidency, to not to accept the election. As you remember, a recent column of mine, I pointed out it's been a string. It started with the day after the election with the recounts. Then they were going to try and talk the Electoral College electors to change their votes, which, of course, was ridiculous. And then they were going to challenge the actual Electoral College count at the Congress. And then they were going to refuse to confirm cabinet members, something which courtesy always afforded new presidents. Then they began a campaign which continues this day. First they tried to slander senior presidential staff appointees, and when that failed, they turned to various family members, the daughter, the daughter-in-law, the sons, of the president. They called for impeachment even before he really took office or was there very long. And, of course, all along they are being egged on by the media, the establishment media, which, as I wrote early before the election, we called it the media coup d'etat. Now it really is a coup d'etat attempt. And finally, having failed in every one of these attempts, none of which had any substance. I mean, I agree that General Flynn, for example, was not the greatest appointment. But one thing out of so many things. And that now with the Russian attempt, which is focused on one of the president's sons. But as you point out, Silvio, there's nothing. There are emails, there are exchanges, but there's nothing there which is illegal or necessarily improper. I was walking today in a mall, and I was walking by a person who very seriously said, "Yes, it's probably treason." And I thought to myself, I didn't say anything, but I thought to myself, on what planet are you living? Is there an exchange of material about candidates on all sides? Yes. Did the Democrats do it to Trump? Absolutely. I don't see anybody complaining about all those tapes that were revealed that were off the record, which were so damaging at the time. Does anyone really believe that the Clinton campaign did not know about them or have anything to do with the timing of their release? I mean, so what we have here is an extended delirium egged on by the media in which a properly and duly elected president of the United States, who is actually accomplishing things, doesn't mean we have to agree with everything he does, but he's made two foreign visits, which were, I think, and some people will not agree with the sentiments that were expressed, but were very successful in many ways. And insofar as they were not well received abroad, they were successful for us, because I think the time had come for America to reassert its leadership in the Western world, something that did not exist under President Obama. And President Trump has done it. He's been he has his own ideas. He does all kinds of unusual things. His tweets, as I've pointed out, is you may not like them all. Some of them may be a little bit rude, but the fact is that his tweets are an end run that he is in the media that he has accomplished to speak directly to the American people who want to listen to him, and that it was something that was done by no less a figure than Franklin Roosevelt with his fireside chats. Exactly the same type of thing against a hostile media. So what we have here is an extended delirium of an inability for those who lost the election to accept it. Now, as I've pointed out, we need an intelligent, thoughtful opposition. But instead of being in opposition of what the president is doing, what he stands for, they're reducing themselves to petty gossip and smears and things which have nothing to do with the substance of government. And
exactly.
What they're doing is, I want to point out, I don't want to go on too long about this, mm-hmm. they are enabling the president and his administration to accomplish things that they would not have been able to accomplish because
right.
they are taking attention away from the substance of the new administration's programs and policies and focusing on things which they think will get people all aroused and which, in fact, are gradually turning off the American people. And we can see that in the media where you see networks like CNN going, losing their entire rating advantages, where people are no longer taking the New York Times, the Washington Post, Associated Press seriously, as they used to be taken seriously, even by those who disagreed with them. But now those publications are basically propaganda sheets.
Right.
I mean, the National Enquirer is more accurate than the Washington Post and the New York Times.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I look at it as, I agree with you. I look at it as a political pundit, and I look at the politics of all of this. But I also, I mean, I talk to people who are not political, as I say, and there's a complete disconnect between this Russia thing and the rest of the country. And I'll just give you some examples. You know, from time to time, I drop by. There's a very famous fast food place that carries CNN, and I'm not going to say who they are, but I think everybody knows who they are. They have a, you know, television screens, and they carry CNN. And I stop there sometimes to get coffee. The staff there is very nice, so I'll stop by and get some coffee, and I'll sit down and look at the screen. There's nobody watching it. You know, nobody's watching the news. Everybody seems to be doing their own thing. I'm the only one who seems to be paying attention to it. And it's a 30-minute, 40-minute, whatever time I'm there, just attack on Trump. It's just every little thing. And the other thing I've noticed, too, about CNN, which is very uncomfortable, is that their guests tend to be very selected among people who don't like the president. I don't really see any strong supporters of President Trump as any of the panelists. They tend to be either Democrat representatives or senators who are very anti-Trump, or some commentators who are anti-Trump. So is it any wonder, Barry, as you indicated, is it any wonder that their ratings are going down and down and down, to the point that I did a little tweet last week, which I write tweets also, not just President Trump, but I do a few here and there. Mine are not as famous as his, of course. But one of the tweets I did was I put a little picture of Yogi Bear, and I said Yogi Bear is now drawing a larger audience than CNN, Barry. That's how bad it's gotten for this network, and it's all self-inflicted, Barry. They're doing it to themselves with very, what I would describe as lousy journalism, Barry.
Well, and the same thing is, I don't read the Washington Post. Every once in a while I see the New York Times. I can't read it anymore. The only thing I do with the New York Times is they still have the best new Sunday crossword puzzle, and I do that every week, and that's about all I read. As you point out, it is relentlessly negative. And, you know, that's not what the post-war modern American media tradition was. The modern American media tradition is you have the editorial page, you have the editorial commentators who can say whatever they want, and they can have their bias, and everybody knows that, and that's fine. But then, as I pointed out during the campaign and again after it was over, the establishment media is completely confusing the editorial page with the front page. And there was an expectation in America, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, that the reportage, the news part of the media, would be somewhat balanced. No one's perfect. Nothing is perfectly objective. But it would be balanced. And that doesn't exist anymore in the establishment media. And the country is becoming not only more and more divided, but the media itself is in a crisis that I hope it can recover from, because I think the ratings for the media, even by the pollsters, is that it's so low that nobody has a lot of confidence in it. And I think that's an American tragedy.
Well, and you're exactly right. That's the other problem. It's not just the audience, but it's the confidence problem, that a lot of people just don't trust the media. And I have to tell you, as someone, you know, as you know my story, I came to the United States when I was a kid. So, you know, I didn't obviously live that long under a communist system, but my parents did. And one of the first things that happens in a communist system is that they destroy the free press, and they destroy it by basically creating a one newspaper government, or everything is run by the same people. And it's extremely important for a country to have a free press, because a free press is really the accountability against bad politicians. And I've always, you know, I keep saying I love an aggressive media. I love a media that researches and will ask a difficult question. They didn't do it under President Obama, unfortunately, and I think that's why they lost so much credibility with people like me. But I just feel like they're in a crisis. I think you're exactly right. And the only good news about it all is we may be watching many of these media organizations collapsing in front of us. I don't know how CNN gets its credibility back, Barry. I really don't, because there's a lot of people like me who are going to have a hard time believing anything they say, Barry.
Well, and the same is true of the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Associated Press and a number of other outlets. It is an American tragedy. And, you know, because the free press, there's two sides to the free press. One, we have a constitution that protects it, so the law protects a free press. But on the other hand, one of the greatest defenders of a free press is the press itself. By maintaining a certain integrity and fairness, they keep the need and desire for a free press strong. And when they don't provide that, when the public turns away from the media, then we have a problem. And of course, we live in a time of extraordinary technology, and because of the internet, and because of the internet, including, you know, for example, I have a column, a blog, the Prairie Editor, and I don't need a printing press. And I don't need extensive equipment. I can just do it out, put out my editorial opinions, and they go all over the world from my living room. So there are so many alternatives now, so many choices that the news, and so these very large establishment, elite news media, both in the print and the broadcast industry, have fallen behind, and they may have become dinosaurs because there may have been a news media asteroid hit the landscape, and we may find
right.
that the Washington Post. But I don't know. You expressed it. I don't know how we have confidence again in these publications and in these networks, who have not only continually, but as we speak, continue not only to show bias, but to create absolutely fake news. I mean, I think the original use of fake news was on the other side. But the real truth is, the real fake news is coming from the left side in an attempt to delegitimize an administration. And at the bottom of it all, Silvio, is the fact that Donald Trump is dismantling the Obama program and policies that were put in place for 8 years.
Right.
He's disrupting those programs and policies. And, you know, if you have an opposition, then you should oppose that.
Right.
And not be preoccupied with gossip and scandal.
Right.
That isn't even true.
You know, you're so right. And when you say that he's dismantling the Obama record, one of the reasons that he's able to do it is because so much of what President Obama accomplished was by executive order. So had President Obama been able to go to the Congress and work with Congress, I mean, he did it with Obamacare, of course. That was a law. But most of the other things that he did were through executive order. So when you govern by executive order, then the next fellow can delete it by executive order, which is a lot of what is happening. And I think you've touched on what I think is a very important point. I think there's a frustration on the part of many Democrats and many on their side that not only is the Obama record being deleted, you know, one line at a time, but also I think something, and I told a Democrat this the other day, by the way, I told him this, I said that his problem is that he didn't want to understand or didn't want to admit just how destructive the Obama years had been to the party. When you lose 1,000 seats over 8 years, you know, that's pretty destructive, Barry.
And people forget, from 2009 to 2011, the Democrats had the White House and the House and the Senate. They were in control. And even then, when they were, they barely passed Obamacare because there was so much opposition to it. Then, when that record, that two-year record, was put before the voters, they rejected it. In fact, it was a landslide. And in 2010, going into 2011, we had new Republican majorities, and although the president did narrowly win re-election, the same thing happened in 2014. And then, of course, in 2016 was the apotheosis of this movement, where the country said enough. And I believe that if the Democrats were to focus on the substance of the issues that they face and that the country faces, there could be a serious opposition, and they might do well in 2018. Under those circumstances. But if they continue in the way they're going now and focusing on these so-called Russian scandals and things of which it's all smoke and mirrors, there's no substance, there has been nothing. If there is something, let's have it. But so far, after all that verbiage and all those accusations, there's still nothing there. And as long as they do that, and turn attention away. Remember, I've said on this program, I've written, it's not so much what President Trump says, it's what he does that you should pay attention to. Now, since our last meeting, the president went to Europe, and he went to Poland, and he gave a very fine speech.
He sure did.
In fact, it was a really remarkable speech. Of course, the Democrats disagree with it, because it's a speech which extols American exceptionalism, which extols America's role in the world, and which actually says nice things about Western civilization and about the achievements of faith and capitalism and all kinds of things which are considered politically incorrect on the left. But the fact is that he got everybody's attention in Poland, and then
he
at G20.
Sure.
And he did a very nice job in the Middle East, but his speech in Warsaw was a very serious, thoughtful speech, and I think we'll go down. I mean, it didn't have any famous lines like "Ask not what you can do for your country," or "Tear down this wall," but it, in terms of the overall statement of that speech, I think it was very, very serious, very profound. So
I agree.
Now we have to pay a little attention to what he says, too, not just what he does. And
right.
I mean, we won't always agree with President Trump. There will be times when even now, you were one of the earliest major Cuban-American commentators to strongly support President Trump. And but even you always reserve the right to disagree.
Sure.
There is always nobody, you don't always agree 100% with everybody, but I think that if you would read the establishment media, you'd think the country has gone off the deep end, but I think the country, the voters, think that we're going in the right direction. And if we could just get that Congress And as you know, my most recent op-ed was the Congress shouldn't be allowed to recess until they get something done. Well, as you pointed out this afternoon, they decided not to recess. So maybe
right.
we're going to get something done.
In fact, we're going to talk about that in a second. Let me take a little break, Barry. When I come back, I want to talk about exactly what you're talking about, and that is this whole question of Obamacare and the U.S. Senate apparently staying in Washington to get something done, and that's good news. That's very good news for everybody. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. As always, that's the music of our friend Carlos Guedes, who is from Venezuela. And if you're following the news from Venezuela, you know that things are very tough down there, extremely tough. So I know Carlos and his family are in touch with their family down there. But things, that's another challenge for President Trump, Barry. I mean, I know we're going to talk about Obamacare, but the world has a lot of problems. And I'm sure that he's got a, you know, he's like a man with a very big portfolio. He's got a lot of issues going on around the world, and that's what makes all these distractions back here so painful. Because, you know, we should be worried about big things like Venezuela could be collapsing or North Korea. That's what we should be really focused on, Barry.
Well, and for close to home, we see our neighbors in South America. Brazil is in trouble. Argentina seems to be doing a little better. Of course, Venezuela is collapsing. Colombia seems to be the most stable of the larger countries. But those are our neighbors, and those South American countries remain unstable. The Caribbean, the Central America, of course, as you point out, the most serious problem in North Korea, and plus our relationship with the two emerging world economic powers of China and India, one a democracy, one not. And then, of course, we have the European crisis, which continues, and Brexit, and then our relationship with President Putin, plus the perpetual tinderbox of the Middle East, which never seems to get solved, and which is continually in violent flux. And so there are all these problems just in the foreign policy area. We have a lot
right.
of problems. We're going to talk about them now, I'm sure, some of the domestic problems
sure.
that we have. And it's a very, very difficult time. And it isn't that we shouldn't have opposition or criticism, but it's that we need to focus on what the substance of these issues are so that we can talk intelligently and act intelligently as ways to resolve our problems.
Exactly. And again, always remind, you know, always remembering, because I've been, and I'm sure you've been too, I've been on both sides of this, meaning that there are, you know, I've been on the side that lost the election, and I've been on the side that won the election. And you may remember after 2012 that I was very disappointed that Mitt Romney had lost the election, because I had a lot of hopes on his candidacy. I thought he was a great man. But, you know, you don't go hurt the country. You know, what you do is you accept the results, and then you say, okay, well, how do we get back in the game? And the way we did it, I say we Republicans did it, was to win state legislatures and to win the Congress and so on. And that's what the Democrats ought to be doing, focusing on that rather than relitigating the election and arguing about the election and pushing all these theories that I think are actually hurting the country a lot more than they realize. But let me take you to Obamacare, because as I mentioned, I think off the air, I mentioned that I was a bit concerned a few days ago that nothing may happen, but I think now something will happen. They're going to stay in Washington a little longer, and apparently they're going to get it done before they take the recess. But there, I think it's simply a case they made a promise, and they have to keep that promise. Otherwise, I think there's going to be a lot of angry Republicans. I don't think there's going to be a lot of angry Democrats, because those people are not going to vote for the Republicans anyway. But I think the Republicans, if they don't repeal and do something, are going to be very upset with the Republican Party, Barry.
And it's not just Obamacare. As Newt Gingrich points out, this is a very critical moment to put forward proposals on tax cuts. Because, in fact, if you do cut taxes, the benefits from tax cuts happen over a period of months. And if you wait until a month before the election, you're never going to see any results. And the voters are going to wonder, why did we have tax cuts if there's no results? So as Mr. Gingrich points out, and I think absolutely correctly, you have to get the country behind your proposal, vote for it, put it on the president's desk, and have it in place around the first of the year so we can get the benefits from tax cuts, which I believe there will be. But that's another issue. Not only tax reform, education reform. There are some things that are being done. I hope you noticed, and I know you did, that we did pass, and I thought it was bipartisan as well, to be fair, VA reform. And now we learn that the administration has been firing large numbers of people who should be fired in the VA administration and suspending some others and getting that wound in America, you know, taking care of our veterans, getting that fixed and repaired. And he's doing it. It's happening. It required the passage of a bill which, as I say, was bipartisan. But things, in order for us to start getting, for things to get better, we have to act. We had 8 years of stalemate, in my view, for the most part. And in the one few areas where we didn't have stalemate, such as Obamacare, it was ill-advised. It wasn't a good proposal. Now, some people disagree with that. And it's a free country. But the fact of the matter is, it is a failing program. And I read today that only half the number of insurance companies are even filing to be part of it in this next cycle, half of what was in the last cycle. And the cost in most places and for most Americans for having Obamacare is rising dramatically, so much so that, in fact, it may not be a meaningful program for very much longer for very many people. And,
well, I'll give you an example, if I may just quickly give you a real-world
yes.
example of Obamacare, because we have some very good friends, a very nice young man and young woman at our church who have they have one baby, and they should be having a baby at any moment this week. And I was talking to the young man a couple Sundays ago, and he knows that I talk about politics and all of that, and we were talking about Obamacare, and he said, my premium, this is a young couple, the wife is at home, he has his own business, he does well, but still, he said, my premium is over $1,500 a month. I pay more for Obamacare than for my mortgage. And then on top of that, you have a very extremely high deductible. So it's like you pay $1,500 and your deductible is sky high. So you might have to be out of your pocket $18,000 in premiums a year plus another $10,000 deductible. So this young man is very seriously pondering about just dropping the whole thing and working something out with the hospital. I think that's a fairly typical example of Obamacare, which leads me to another point that, if I may ask you about something else, I keep hearing these polls of how unpopular the new Republican proposal is. And it's almost as they want you to believe that Obamacare is suddenly popular. And I don't believe that. That's a poll that I don't believe. Because I don't know how something that brought down the Democrat Party over 8 years is now all of a sudden popular in 6 months, Barry.
Well, I think behind all that is the sense that if they repeal Obamacare, they're not going to necessarily replace it. And I know some people have seriously suggested that there be an immediate repeal and then take a little more time for the replacement, which I think could be reasonable. I think one of the complexities here is that, and this is an issue where it's not, in my view, partisan, is that one of the realities of modern life, there's two sides to it. On the one side, medical technology, medical advance, medication, new techniques in medicine are not only extending life by decades, but are saving thousands, tens of thousands, maybe even millions of Americans from premature death, from either from heart disease, from cancer, from diabetes. It's amazing what we've accomplished. As you know, I'm a doctor's son, and my father graduated from medical school in 1927 when there were no antibiotics, and now we've got computer medicine, we've got all these techniques to save lives. Well, that doesn't come for free. So medical expenses, medical insurance, medical coverage is something which is a new, increasingly new factor in our lives. And we're not going to get it for nothing. It can't be done. And I think that a lot of political people on both sides thought either it could be done for nothing or that we didn't have to do anything. But the fact of the matter is that we live in a society where we can't have millions of Americans sick who live right next door to millions of Americans who are well. We've got to look out for everybody. That doesn't mean to say we subsidize everybody's medical care. There are ways, and there needs to be very thoughtful, intelligent systems to make a lot more medical care available and yet not bankrupt the country. It isn't easy. One of the things about the delay in the replacement of medical of Obamacare is that it's very complex. And even Republicans are not, even though they were united in opposing Obamacare, they weren't necessarily united on all the details of the replacement. And that's what we're seeing.
Right.
And I'm
that's where I am.
But the fact is, they made a promise. They
right.
made a promise. They made a promise they would cut taxes. They said there would be education reform. They said there would be VA reform, and we've got it. And they're doing
right.
the right thing. It isn't like nothing is not happening. Isn't happening. Things are happening. But the major proposals that caused most American voters, many of them Democrats, to vote for as unusual a candidate and disruptive a candidate as Donald Trump, was the sense that he was going to make changes. And I think he's trying. And now it's up to the Congress
right.
to be his partner.
Right.
And I think
I was just going to quickly say that I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I just wanted to get something in real. I just wanted to get something in real quick. I'm one of those Republicans who finds himself a little bit troubled by the replacement part. If it was up to me, if I was king for a day and I could do it my way, I would repeal only, and then say the people who are currently on Obamacare, you're going to have it for 3 years. Nothing's going to happen to you. Nothing's going to happen. No, you will be covered for the next 3 years under whatever you have. And then I would honestly send it to the states, and I would have the states deal with it. I would have, you know, Texas, Minnesota, whatever. All the states basically deal with it in their own jurisdictions. And I actually think that if you did that, the net result will be a lot of creative ways of solving this problem. like you were talking about, the expense problem, but also the states will start using health care and their different health care approaches as a way of inviting relocations. So now if you're a company and you're looking to relocate, just like Texas, for example, uses taxation as a way of attracting businesses, some states will say, look, you know, we've got this great health care program in our state that will cost you less than if you go to that state. So you create this competition between the states, which I think in the long run will make it cheaper for the consumer, Barry.
Right. I think that makes sense. I think that, you know, we live in a federal system. A lot of people forget the fact that America was founded on a principle of balance between the federal government and the states, the individual states. And what happened over the last 200 years is there's been patterns in which at one point the states are more dominant than the federal government, and then the federal government becomes too bureaucratic, too centralized, and there seems to be a movement back to the states, which is what's going on right now. As you know, most of the successful programs, not just in health care insurance, but in all aspects of American public policy, are taking place in individual states led by very creative governors and legislatures, which are actually trying to solve problems in a realistic way with balanced budgets and all the things. These are all very difficult. And as I point out, and I want to stress this, there is no cheap way to continue to have such extraordinary medical technology that we have, whether it be medicines, machines, techniques. There's no way to have all these advances without paying for them.
Right.
So we must make a decision as a society, what are our priorities?
Mm-hmm.
And we must also be careful, as we noticed, we saw most recently in with that child in England, where you have a socialized medical system which where human life is determined by bureaucrats as opposed to by parents. I mean, you've got a serious problem because, as we know from the Canadian system, which is a socialized system, so they don't necessarily have – they have advantages and they have lower costs, it seems, although their tax system has to pay for it, but they lose their ability to see medical personnel promptly and to get operations promptly. This is one of the problems of single payer or socialized medicine. Our system has its flaws, but you can go see a doctor on a 1 hour's notice.
That's right.
And get good care.
That's right.
And the problem is we can't, for example, people say, well, people have no coverage at all. Everyone in America has emergency coverage because there are no cities or locations where emergency medical care is turned away.
Right.
Because of cost.
You show up in any emergency room.
That doesn't make it an efficient system or a good system. I agree. So that's what we need to resolve. But you know, the Republicans were the opposition 2011 to 2017, 6 years, they were critical of Obamacare. They won two off-year elections because of Obamacare opposition. And there is no excuse now not to do something.
I agree.
I mean, it isn't merely...
I'm with you.
I'm
with you
100%. Are critical and say, okay, you criticize, now what's your plan? And you know what? The Democrats are right about that.
Right. No, I agree. On this one, we agree 100%. We're going to have to wrap it up today. Time always flies when we do this I-35 connection that we do from time to time, but it just means we have a reason to be on the radio again and get together at a future time. But you're exactly right. I mean, it's up to the Republicans, to use the baseball analogy. You know, the Republicans are at the plate right now. They need to swing and do something, and there's no more excuses. I mean, they have the presidency, they have the House, they have the Senate. There's no more excuses. And as I say, I'm not rushing this because I know it's hard, and I'm willing to give them time to work things out, and I'm not expecting a perfect plan, but they have got to they've got to do something. But, Barry, on that note, we're going to have to wrap it up. As always, thank you so much. I love the Prairie Editor. I love reading it. I think about 2 or 3 days a week you put something out. I love it. As you know, I bought a subscription for one of my sons. He loves it too. And it's just a you're a great resource, and it's great to have you as a friend.
Well, and I appreciate you letting me speak to your nationwide radio audience, and it's always a pleasure, and I always enjoy our conversations.
Well, we certainly we always have a good time. I love this thing we did tonight about the I-35 connection. I think I'll mention that every time we chat now.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. Thank you, Barry. Thank you so much for your time tonight, as always. And keep up the great work at the Prairie Editor. I absolutely love it.
Muy buenas noches.
Muy buenas noches. Our good friend Barry Kosselman, the Prairie Editor. Well, we got into a lot of stuff tonight, but I think the important thing is the Republicans have got to do something about Obamacare, and I think the media has to be more responsible about this Russia thing. It's just... we just cannot be consumed with this Russia thing, which is not much of a story. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing. Just a lot of, just a lot of distraction. That's all that it is. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas.